Last thing I'll leave you with is both sad-ish, but also kind of fun and awesome, and definitely not true.
He said it's sad, but he started smiling. It's hard to get a bead.
Yeah, I can see how that could be confusing. Hello, welcome to Guide to the Unknown. I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
And this week we're, not hopping across the pond, is it?
No, we're like traveling to the other side of the globe.
That's right, to find out what scary stuff is happening in Australia.
Yeah, it's always fun when we do this. We've done this largely around this continent.
Yeah, state by state.
Yep, and this side of the hemisphere.
Right.
Where we have looked at a particular location and dug into some stories. But we got a suggestion last week that we take a look at Australia.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say I do not remember who made the suggestion, so please somebody reach out. I should have taken a note, but I did not.
I'm going to see if I did.
And that's on me.
Nah, it's on both of us, William.
It's true. You know what? Yes, I will share the blame with you. But we're going to take a look at some stories from Australia.
I did not write it down. I'm very sorry.
Some hauntings. I watched a very interesting, eye-opening movie.
I'm so curious about that movie. It's been on my radar for a really long time. Yeah.
It put a lot of puzzle pieces in place for me, I have to say, pop culture-wise. Just like the genealogy of pop culture.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Jesse.
Luckily, so we record the show live every week on youtube.com/gttupod. And luckily, Jesse is in the chat this week as they were last week. And it was Jesse who suggested Australia. So thank you so much, Jesse.
Thank you, Jesse. I'm sorry for our sloppiness.
Yes.
But we also promised something last week. So we're not going to get to Australia just yet.
Oh, my God. I totally forgot about this.
Well, I think it'll be relatively brief. Yes. But last week, Kristen and I watched The Mist and The Fog.
Right.
And each of us was sort of impressed by the other's description of the movies.
Yeah.
I watched The Fog, and I begrudgingly came away from it not being the biggest fan.
Yep.
Kristen watched The Mist and very much, I think, had a hard time with it. But The Mist sounded really interesting to me.
Right.
You said that you really liked The Fog.
Yeah.
So we were curious. We watched each other's movies just to sort of see, like, Did our reviews delivered to each other last week affect your viewing of that movie for this week?
Right. I don't think that your review of it affected it either way. I could certainly, like, there were points where I could see what you were saying. I remembered that, you know, you were talking about how it was super slow and stuff. And I could certainly see that upon this viewing. But I super enjoyed it, as I have in the past.
So you just shirked off all of my opinions and thoughts and feelings.
Yes, I did.
They didn't slow you down in any way.
No, they really didn't. More like, oh, I can see what Will's saying. Like, there were definitely things where they'd be holding on something forever. Like, the exterior of, like, the next house we're going to be at. You'd be looking at the outside of it for what felt like 30 seconds. And I was like, boy, there's some, I see what he's saying with that. But I still liked everything else about it so much. I was like, it's fine, whatever.
Fair enough. Yeah, I do really like the things that happen in the movie.
Right.
It just took a while.
There's too much in between those things.
There's too much in between those things. Yeah. Yes, I'd like to get to it. For me, I watched The Mist, and I think that I almost entirely agree with you.
Okay.
Almost entirely.
Mm-hmm.
It is a shockingly self-serious movie.
Yeah.
There is not a funny bone, despite funny things constantly happening. There are like 1,000 ironic things that happen where like somebody's going to be the hero and then they get eaten.
Right.
Oh, we can prove to everybody that there's a monster. Oh, wait, it dissolved.
Or Bunny from Sex and the City throwing a can of peas at Marsha Gay Harden's head.
Yes. There
That's
are
funny.
1,001 things that should be treated with a little more silly. I don't want to say silly. I'm not asking for some
levity.
Slapstick. A little bit of levity, though. Yeah. But it is so self-serious. It has a, like, moaning choir score at the end.
Yeah.
That tells you, that screams, this is all high importance.
Yes.
Here. This is a prestige experience.
Of course.
And it all plays like some bizarre series of dark jokes. The father is clearly, by the end of that movie, the butt of a big cosmic joke.
Yeah.
But the movie treats it like a tragedy rather than like the universe messing with you, which
and
is what
like
I think it should feel like.
Almost like a teachable moment or something.
Yeah, it was
but there's
weird.
There's no way that it could be.
It was so dour, I think, is how you would put it. And I couldn't agree more. Mm. But there's so much cool stuff in it. that I kind of struggled. But yeah, it was fun to do the movie swap. I definitely watched it with your voice in my head.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I liked a lot.
You know, I'm sorry to have put myself there. Perhaps you could have enjoyed it more if my voice weren't in your head.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, to be honest. All right. Yeah, what all do you right. think?
Let's go down under.
Let's do it.
Okay. Want me to kick us off?
Sure, please.
All right. So I'm going to talk about a UFO case that I gather is somewhat famous or notorious in Australia. And this is the disappearance of Frederick Valentich? Valentich? Okay. Valentich. It's Valentine, except for instead of N-E-C-H. Valentich.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess. So this person disappeared, and was it UFOs?
Yes.
That's what the question is.
Okay.
And the answer is definitely no.
Oh, okay.
But there's still stuff to talk about. So this guy was an inexperienced pilot who took off from Victoria in Australia in a rented airplane, and he was headed to King's Island to meet up with some friends for a fresh seafood dinner on the water.
Okay. I can't wait to have my fresh seafood dinner.
Right on the water.
That sounds like it's offered on a placard. Fresh seafood dinner.
Yeah.
You know, 25 American dollars in Australia.
Right, on the water. I mean, I don't think that whatever I read called it fresh seafood dinner. I think I called it that.
Yeah, yeah.
But for all I know, that's what they call it
just
there.
Dip maybe your mouth in the ocean and come up with a bunch of shrimp.
Yeah, I must have intuited it somehow.
Yeah.
And also, this is a lifestyle that's completely foreign to me. The idea of just taking a plane to go out to dinner.
Yeah.
And yet, I remember when I was a hairdresser, I had a client who did just that. She was a pilot, but not like a commercial pilot. She's gotten her pilot's license, which you can do.
Sure.
And there's a pilot school in Princeton where I worked. So she did that, and she would just, like, rent a plane and take it places.
People are taking some heat for that now. I keep seeing headlines about Taylor Swift having to answer.
Well, that's a private jet. I think that's a little bit different. I think she was flying, like, a, you know, a two-seater plane or something.
I'm just going to put it out there in the universe. If something happens and I make oodles of money, I will 100% take a private jet to, like, the store at the end of the street.
William, don't say that. They're not going to let you make money now.
Oh, no.
Because now you're the bad guy.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
They.
Oh, I shouldn't have said that.
No, no, no. You have to pledge to never take one.
You got to play the game.
Yeah.
If you want to get
it. No, William, don't even say that. You just are conscientious.
It's Hollywood's a big game. And Will Rogers couldn't play by the rules.
Yeah, so I took my private jet to ShopRite. So what?
That was my,
and that's why he was exiled from the community.
That was my impression of Milton from Scream 3.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. I thought you were being like a newscaster.
No, he says Rena Reynolds couldn't play by the news. You want to get ahead in this business?
By the game.
Yeah, you got to play the game or go home.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're not going to be doing either because you talked about a private jet. And yet you're not going to take one. So you can't play, but you also can't go home.
I'll just stay home.
Okay. He went out for dinner in his jet. And the conditions were pretty much mostly good, except he'd be flying toward the sunset, which is apparently very tricky to do.
Okay.
And yet he never made it to his destination. So here is where the UFO stuff starts coming in. At 7:06 p.m., he called into Air Flight Service, and he said that there was an unidentified flying object maneuvering around him. This is a quote from the recording. "It seems to be a large aircraft below 5,000, just passed over me at least 1,000 feet above." And, you know, I don't really know what that means.
Yeah.
And then he said, "It's approaching right now from due east towards me. It seems like he's trying to play some sort of game."
Ooh.
So projecting a lot onto whatever he is seeing.
Of course.
And assuming. And then his transmissions became weirder from there. First, he said that the other aircraft that had been flying around him was completely still and stationary. And then he said that it was now orbiting above him. And he also said it's got a green light and is sort of metallic. Like, it's all shiny on the outside. It just vanished.
Whoa.
So, you know, it's going up around him. It's being still. It's shiny. It disappears. Then he reports that his engine is sounding rough and the transmission was lost after a loud metallic noise happened. Then neither Valentich nor his aircraft were ever found.
Not even the aircraft?
No.
Wow.
So, you know, you get a distress call from somebody who says that there's basically a UFO flying around them, then hear a scary noise, and then that person and the plane are never seen again.
Terrifying.
So, like, what the hell is the deal with that?
Puzzling forever. It makes me think of...
It's not so puzzling forever, even though they don't find the actual airplane, but...
Really? Okay. Because at first, the thing that I was picturing, the idea of somebody just being like, it's all around me. It made me think about like people in a boat seeing a shark fin swimming all around them.
Yeah.
And just being sort of like, help, like, what am I going to do? I can't talk to the shark. It's underwater for one, and in second, it doesn't speak English.
Right.
So like, you just sort of go like, it's around me, now it's to the left of me, now it's to the right of me. It went under, I don't have eyes on it.
Yeah.
It could be anywhere. I don't know. All I know is I feel vulnerable and I'm helpless.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary. And especially with all the stuff we know about UFOs and UAPs today, how they are evidently real and unknown.
Yeah. Like regularly out there. Yeah. So maybe the likelihood of running into one is higher than we thought it had been previously.
Maybe. Yeah.
So there were other witnesses who seemed to support his account. There was one person who said that they saw a green light in the sky that night, and that matches up with his story. And then there was also a farmer who was in an area that was kind of along the edge of Valentik's flight path, who said that they saw a flying object hovering over their property. They guessed that the object was about 30 meters across, and it appeared to have a small airplane attached to its side.
Whoa.
According to the farmer, the attached aircraft was leaking oil, and he was so disturbed by what he saw that he etched the aircraft's tail number into one of his tractors so that he wouldn't forget it. So I guess just using whatever's handy.
He could see it that clearly?
That's what he says. And the number apparently matched Valentik's plane.
Wow.
What he saw.
And as far as you know, at least, this person who like wrote down the number and everything is unrelated to Valentik or anybody. He's just sort of a passerby on the ground.
Yes, but...
Okay, yeah.
Here's the thing. So there are a bunch of factors. You know, you hear this story and then hear a bunch of things that are going to make you go, I know.
But I've got such a fun mental image right now. And usually UFO stuff doesn't make me get all amped up.
Pie-eyed.
But you talking about, like... You gave me the perspective of the radio controller, hearing him being like, it's on the left, it's on the right, thunk, and it goes dead. Like, I can see that as a movie. That's Pontypool. That's, I can hear that. That sounds fun. And then you gave me the mental image of a UFO with an airplane stuck to the side. And
I've
never heard of that before, Kristen.
Yeah.
And immediately I'm thinking of, you know, odd technology and magnets and grabbing claws and,
You know, like gravitational technology fields. That we can't even conceive of.
It's a playground of stuff that,
for the mind,
had me excited. So you're going to deflate it all now?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
It reminds me of, we on our Patreon a few weeks ago watched an episode of Unsolved Mysteries where there was a case of spontaneous human combustion.
The greatest
of, it's incredible,
all time. The GOAT of things we've ever seen.
It is the GOAT. And yeah, like, the explanation is fairly simple, and the people who believe that it could be spontaneous human combustion are like fairly easily dispatched.
Yes.
This reminded me of that a little bit. So here's the thing. This guy, Valentik, was a mega UFO conspiracy theorist.
Okay.
And by all accounts, not a great pilot.
Oh, he's a dead guy, so I'm trying not to laugh.
I know.
Okay.
A heady combination.
Yes.
He was rejected by the Australian Air Force twice. Mm. When this happened, he had recently failed his second attempt at passing the commercial flight exam. And in the 158 flight hours that he had under his belt, he had been involved in 3 in-flight accidents, one where he entered restricted airspace and twice when he deliberately flew into clouds.
What?
He was under threat of prosecution for one of the cases of flying into a cloud on purpose.
This is exactly the spontaneous human combustion
thing. Right. It's like, oh, okay. I mean, mystery solved, I think.
100%. Can we do spontaneous human combustion next week?
Yeah, we can. I just don't know if there's...
We'll find out. Maybe next week's episode is 15 minutes long. Yeah, I want to cover it.
Yeah, okay. All right. So Also, in addition to that, flying over water into the setting sun is apparently disorienting for even, like, very good pilots, never mind somebody who has Valentik's track record.
Right.
So it seems that instead of focusing on the flight tasks that one has to really focus on, that he may have been distracted by his idea of a UFO being out there. And, you know, he also talked about to the transmission guy seeing four lights, and it's posited that they definitely could have belonged to another aircraft, but it's more likely that they were the lights of Mercury, Venus, Mars, and a bright star called Antares.
Whoa, okay.
So just, you know, naturally occurring bright lights, basically. Okay. And according to his transmission, Valentik began circling his aircraft at some point, going, like, around and around. Maybe, you know, because of what was going on with the UFO, he was, like, maybe trying to dodge them, and it's like they're chasing each other.
Oh, he was piloting his craft in a circle.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Like, me chasing you through the kitchen and into the dining room, into the hallway, around and around, until you stick a fork in your head. That is something that happened when we were young.
It's sort of surprising that it's taken this long for that to come up.
I don't know that it hasn't before.
Is this the first time that we've told this story on this show?
It might be. Will and I were, I was chasing Will around. We're joking, having fun. It was right after dinner. Will had a fork in his hand because he had just finished dinner when I decided to pursue him.
This is crazy. As a father now, this is crazy. Okay, continue.
And Will was just so excited by the fun we were having at one point. I guess he was just running with his hands up. And at one point, he stuck the fork in his head and kept running. And Mom saw him running by and something like flashing on his head and was like, stop! And, you know, figured it out.
Just crazy.
Yeah.
Just crazy. For so long, my perspective on this story is, well, I'm a dope.
Right.
What do you want me to, I guess I just thunk, right, stuck the fork directly in the top of my head like a plunger. I must have been 3 or 4 or something like that. I must have been like a little kid.
Yeah.
Running around with a fork.
Yeah, I think so.
This is true. I think it was today. I think it might have been this morning. Zoe has like a bunch of like little toy food. She mm-hmm. has fake food, like a little fake corn. And one of the things that she has is a fake knife.
Yeah.
It's like a fake butcher knife, but it's a relatively soft plastic.
Sure.
I was teaching her how to cut watermelon.
Yeah.
And then she picked up the plastic knife later and was running around with it, stabbing the floor. She looked like Michael Myers.
Yeah.
And I had a moment where I was like, we're not going to run with the plastic knife. And I was like, right, it's soft. I know I shouldn't, but no. Okay. Not even this. I don't care. Cause all it takes is she runs into a thing and the handle, which is a little bit harder, thunks her in the head. I don't need it.
No one needs
We're not running with even the plastic knife. And yet,
maybe not running with anything hard in our hands.
Agreed. 30 years ago, I'm sprinting around the house with a fork in my hands until it's all of a sudden sticking out of my dome.
That's right.
An inch from my fontanelle.
Yes. Ew, I hate the fontanelle.
I was obsessed with the fontanelle.
I think it's so gross, and I don't like the name either.
I know.
Nothing about it is for me.
I definitely agree. I assume in the fork story, I was actually probably around, let's say, 7 months old.
Yeah, right, of course.
Sprinting.
Yeah.
Speeding faster.
And me in hot pursuit.
Yes. You were probably just running from me.
Yeah, like, right.
He's coming.
How is he doing this? Will also, I thought about this recently, that you stuck your head through two banisters and got stuck there.
Yeah. I did that too.
Stuck. And he also climbed up, like, how do you call it? Like, not an armoire, but for lack of a better term, an armoire. And then it all fell back on him. He climbed up it, and then it was like, backwards, like Marv.
I think it's one of the bookcases you have in your dining room.
No.
It wasn't one of those?
No.
I thought it was.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, I fell like Marv. Yeah. It just landed that he said it was like Marv.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Those bookcases were never in your room. They were always in like a living room or
something. Childhood head injuries. Don't My Favorite Murder, don't they talk about this as being a precursor to serial killers?
I believe it is one of them, yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, keep an eye on me.
And you played football briefly?
Oh, very briefly, though.
I know.
Very briefly. And let's just say I didn't get into too many tussles.
Just play long enough to get that picture.
Oh, God. Yeah, I didn't even want the picture.
I know.
I'm the only kid in the football team pictures smiling. Because I was a theater kid. I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
You take a picture, you say cheese, and you smile. But right. It didn't occur to me until later when the photo was published.
Be a tough guy.
You're supposed to be a tough guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be a tough guy.
You
I wasn't.
You were supposed to be a tough boy.
I was, but I was sitting there smiling like a goon. It was that probably the fork probably severed the tough boy sector of my brain.
I bet you're right. Just cut off.
Yeah.
Let's get back to this tough boy.
Fine.
So he's going around and around.
Yes.
Circling this UFO. And so it's thought that maybe he even just like circled all the way down. Like he fell victim to a horizon illusion, they call it.
Ooh.
And so he could have gone into what they call a graveyard spiral because of it.
That gave me a chill. That sounds horrible.
It sounds absolutely horrible. So also they think that the green light that he observed was probably his own light being reflected off of the water.
A dog chasing his own tail.
Kind of. And because of the model of his plane, it seems like the way that he was flying and doing this crazy stuff could really run out his fuel pretty quickly. And so that's why at the end of that transmission, it sounded like rough and weird because he was pretty much running out of fuel.
Ugh.
Also, both witnesses only came forward after this story came out. The first one, who was the eyewitness who just said they saw lights too, reported this after it was on the news, which is legit. I mean, I could see a scenario where you see something weird in the sky and don't think that much of it. And then you hear about this story on the news and be like, oh, maybe I should tell somebody. And the farmer who came forward did so 36 years later.
Whoa.
So again, could be, but that's a very, very
long time. That's a
long time.
Yeah.
So also while his aircraft was never recovered and his body was never recovered, in 1983, so a few years later, I don't know what this is, but an engine cowl flap washed ashore, and it was concluded that the part came from the kind of plane that he had because a certain set of serial numbers were on it, including the one that Valentich had been flying that night.
Okay.
So it seems like his plane went down.
The graveyard spiral.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I can tell you from experience in Grand Theft Auto, if I'm flying a jet and I try to do a loop-de-loop, sometimes I get a little disoriented.
Look, these things happen. So you know what he went through.
I know what he went through.
Right. We're lucky that we know about... Could
you try again? Every time. One of our watches always tries to pipe up.
Quiet, you. It's a good thing we know about that story because it turns out that Australia has lost its X-Files.
What do you mean?
Or at least they had in 2011. Perhaps they've now built back up a stock. But in 2011, a newspaper filed a Freedom of Information Act request to get the government to release their supernatural files because they're in the public interest, and they were told that the files were missing. The quote, the files could not be located, and Headquarters Air Command formally advised that this file is deemed lost.
Wow.
And that was the end of it.
I don't know if I believe it.
I don't know if I believe it either. I know they said that it like made conspiracy theorists go wild.
Of course.
How could it not?
Yeah, it's like perfect for conspiracy theorists. Sure.
Absolutely. So that's the UFO stuff that I chose to cover. And then I have three quickie urban legends that were pretty neat.
Yes.
They're shorties, but interestingies.
Please.
So I had seen this before. You maybe have seen it too, and maybe some of our listeners and viewers. Have you seen a picture of a koala make the round that looks like completely horrifying? It's like a koala like screaming at the camera and it's all wet.
Maybe. I'm not sure. Pictures of koalas make me laugh.
I love koalas.
They look so studious and serious. They look like little old men.
They do. There was I can't remember what it was called, but there was a show on Nickelodeon with a koala that I loved when I was a kid.
Under the Umbrella Tree? Was it that?
Is that it? I mean, maybe. What? Maybe it is. Because I was about to say, is that Gullah Gullah Island? But no, Gullah Gullah Island is Gullah Gullah Island.
Yeah.
So maybe it is Under the Umbrella Tree. Thank you.
I think there was a person
that?
Who had like a tree in their living room or something, and little puppet characters lived underneath it or something.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if that is what it is.
I'm just thinking trees with koalas.
I know.
It feels like it could be.
I know. I'm looking that up. No, Under the Umbrella Tree is what I was thinking was Gullah Island. Oh. No, it was a cartoon.
Oh, okay.
But, and I had like a little koala toy that was a little grippy thing that you could like stick on stuff.
Sure.
But no, there's this like scary picture of a koala I've seen before. And apparently this is sort of the mascot for the legend of the drop bears.
Okay.
There's like nothing to this, basically.
Sure.
It is essentially the story of angry koala bears that are carnivorous and have fangs. And it's a tall tale told to freak out tourists. So apparently you could be walking under a tree in Australia and they will just drop down onto you and attack you.
Like Ewoks.
Yeah, basically.
I love it.
Right.
In the chat right now, Ray says the koala cartoon show could have been the Noozles.
Maybe it was.
Which is a great name for a
cartoon.
Yeah,
I like that. I like that
too. Great name for a cartoon.
And I'm looking at that real quick. Noozles.
Yeah,
could be Noozles. It could be Noozles.
Show me a Noozle.
Noozle.
Great name for a show. Yep, yeah. I'll take it. Noozle.
There's a lot of our childhood nostalgia in this episode about Australia. Weirdly.
Evidently, yeah, I don't know.
So that's that. Drop bears just messing with tourists.
Fantastic.
And the last thing I'll leave you with is both sad-ish, but also kind of fun and awesome and definitely not true.
He said it's sad, but he started smiling. hard to get a bead.
Yeah, I can see how that could be confusing. This is the story of the Crown Casino morgue. So the casino itself has repeatedly said that this is not true, but there are rumors that have been around for a million years that the Crown Casino in Melbourne has its own morgue that is for elderly gamblers who pass away or who die by suicide after gambling.
Ooh.
At the casino, so that they don't have to have any sort of like negative vibe.
Of
going
course.
On at the casino. So the rumor or urban legend is that there are a bunch of secret passageways throughout the casino and the, you know, adjoining hotel so that the deceased people can be discreetly removed without anybody else knowing anything happened.
Verified or anything? Or just,
no,
just
completely
sort of,
unverified. Yeah, yeah. Yes, it's probably not true.
That's one of my favorite things to believe.
Yeah.
That any sort of, I mean, that's a casino is not the one I usually think of. I usually think about like theme parks.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I,
oh, the tunnels.
Yeah. If I like died at a theme park, they would just put a Mickey head on,
right,
on my corpse.
You know, right. Like, and just like wheel you through and be like, Mickey's not feeling so good right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes, you know.
Right.
I love that sort of thing.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. It reminded me too of the Denver International Airport.
Yeah, very much.
But those, there are really tunnels down there. But the legend around that is people think that like the New World Order operates,
yeah,
below it. And they're lizard people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Real quick, I have a micro,
mm-hmm,
ghost story that I wanted to share with you. And then I think maybe we'll just take a quick break. But this is just super fast, and I think it fits neatly with the urban legends.
Yeah.
So I got this from roadtripcountry.com.au.
Nice.
And this is the story of the Coolgardy ghost cat.
Mm.
I wanted to find... At a certain point, I kept looking up stuff and then going to page 13 of Google.
Uh-huh.
Anytime you search for something on Google, it's front page or nothing.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
But I was like, what's on page 13?
Mm-hmm.
And there are thousands.
Oh, you were specifically jumping to page 13?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
I also, I noticed at a certain point, because we all see this all the time, but we just put on blinders to it because it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you Google something, it'll say like, we found 5,000 billion gajillion,
yeah,
results. As if I'm going to be like, thank you for bringing them all to me.
Right.
I've got them all
now. And how many are there?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But I'm only going to click on one of the first few links.
Right.
So I was like, what happens if I do go through, like, to page 800?
Yeah.
What's on that?
Right.
Does it suck? Is it completely unrelated from what I Googled?
It's a good question.
I know. I kind of wanted to poke around. So I went,
yeah,
to page 13, and I found this, which actually,
excellent,
gave me cool little short stories, and I liked this one. So, because I figured there are probably a bunch of blogs telling the same stories, the big guns.
Definitely.
And listen, I love a big gun.
Of course.
But sometimes I want some sort of like little local flavor kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't even know that this is that, but it's just a small little story. So, the Coolgardy Ghost Cat. One of the most popular attractions in Coolgardy is Warden Finnerty's historic house. You can explore this historic residence and learn more about Coolgardy, a.k.a. the Mother of the Goldfields. Don't know. Doesn't matter. The story goes that during the renovation of Warden Finnerty's historic house, Jack Tree, the curator, great name.
Mm-hmm. Lucky him.
Felt that he was being bitten on the ankles, but could see nothing to account for the sensation. Hmm. He said that it felt like being bitten by a cat or a small dog. During the work, the body of a very flat cat was found under the building.
What? What the hell does that mean?
So, I take it that, like, the Wizard of Oz, like Dorothy landing and dropping her house on the Wicked Witch of the East.
Right.
And her feet rolling up.
So scary.
This historic house must have landed on a cat and flattened it. And then when they were renovating it or whatever, they lifted the house to dust under it, presumably. You know, like somebody standing outside just lifts a corner to vacuum. And there's a flat cat.
My God.
Under there.
Yeah.
So it may have been there since the 1890s. Once the cat had been removed, there were no more reports of bitten ankles.
That's so awesome.
That's the cool garden ghost cat. Isn't that a little story? It affected one guy. I love it. Jack Tree felt like something was biting his ankles.
Yeah.
So he got the cat out of there. It probably made the floor more even, too.
I'm sure it did.
Get the cat out of the center. There's just a lump.
Yes.
It was the flat cat.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just a little micro.
That rules. All right, well, we're going to get to your macro in just a minute. But first, we got to talk about a biggie. It is our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/GTTUpod. And that's where you can go to support the show. We have a bunch of different tier options. You can choose whichever one you're most comfortable with. And we have tons of bonuses over there. You can get up to a bonus episode every single week. We have a whole separate podcast called The Netherworld Dispatch that comes out every single Monday. But whatever level you choose over there, we appreciate it so much. There are even things over there that aren't within the usual bonus episode scope. We just throw them up every once in a while. And there's a Discord, which is basically a really cool online chat room that has different categories with other listeners of the show who've also decided to become patrons, and they're super duper nice, super funny, super cool. I've gotten a million suggestions for things there, and it's the best. So go to patreon.com/GTTUpod to help support the show, and thank you so much to everybody who's already done it, and thank you if you just go take a gander.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you all so much. The Patreon is really there to support us and keep the show in motion.
Yeah.
And so that's why the Netherworld Dispatch is just like a ton of fun to do. No matter how you sign up, you're going to have a bunch of shows waiting for you, plus new stuff in the future.
Yeah, at any tier, there's a ton of stuff.
This past Monday, we uploaded our thoughts about the new Jordan Peele movie, Nope. And honestly, I had a lot of flashbacks to it when, Kristen, you were just telling your story about the Valentech potential UFO.
Right.
Made me think of Nope a whole bunch. And it was fun to talk about. So go check that out if you've seen the movie. This coming Monday, Chris and I are taking a look at Chris Angel Mind Freak.
This is a hot one.
We just recorded it literally before we started this show.
Yeah.
We watched a bunch of Mind Freak clips, and I feel jazzed.
Yeah. Energized.
Energized.
It felt great.
Boy, there is no reality.
Let's leave it there.
We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
I would also like to ask people out there to please consider sharing this show. We're halfway through, and if you're enjoying it, there might be people you know who would enjoy it as well. So please consider sharing this show with people. Post an episode that you like on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Tag us if you'd like. Write a blog post. Mm-hmm. Or you can even leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or any site where you can rate. Like Nicole did, saying, one of my favorite podcasts. Love these two so much. Even if I'm not overly interested in the specific topic of a certain podcast, I still love listening just for the banter. The paranormal and movie episodes are my favorite. Okay. Thank you so much, Nicole, and anybody else who leaves us a review. We greatly appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you. That's so awesome.
May I say one thing on a personal
project
note?
Please.
I mentioned it last week briefly. I have a new website, themythtraveler.com. And just yesterday, as of us recording this, I released a new story over there. Just a total spur of the moment, had an idea last week. I'm able to work quickly enough and without any red tape to be able to just do it and put it online.
Yeah.
And it was fun. I had an idea watching Stranger Things season 4. Where I was like, it'd be funny if you did Stranger Things with old people. Mm. And I was like, that's kind of, I'm sure a million people have had that thought, but I was like,
it.
And then I just started thinking about it more. And it stopped being a joke and started being a story that I just really liked.
Yeah.
So I wrote it down and I posted the first two parts. So what I'm calling episode zero is out right this second on themythtraveler.com for everybody to check out. I recorded a version, like an audiobook that you can listen to of me doing it. And then episode one, which is sort of the real official start as I think of it, is a good bit longer. But right now it's just for paid subscribers. It'll eventually end up in the free bracket. But go check that out if you want to read some of my writing. It does feel to me like if you enjoyed Blackwood specifically, you might enjoy this story. And thank you to anybody who checks it out.
It's so good.
Everybody needs somebody like Kristen in their life.
It's so good, though, Will, for real. It's really, like, so well written. So it really knocked my socks off.
I'm not kidding. I really feel incredibly fortunate and lucky to have somebody that I'm close to like you who is this supportive and kind.
I mean it.
Oh, I very much I'm not joking around. I really, really appreciate it. Because I screwed up this week, and it took me so long working on the stories that I had to push recording of Guide to the Unknown, and Kristen was like, oh, it's no big deal. And I don't know. It's just I'm in a place right now where any support, I really appreciate it. And thank you very much. And thank you to anybody who checks it out. I hope you enjoy it. TheMythTraveler.com. It's not all I'm working on.
Right.
But I wanted to get something out there. I miss the feeling of having a story out in the world. So check it out if that's your kind of thing. And thank you so much.
Definitely recommend.
That's it. Okay. So here is what I looked at in Australia. Let's start with the story of the National Film and Sound Archive of Australia. This is a story that like is almost like tailor-made for my interests.
Yeah.
It's about sort of curating, respecting, and housing film, sound, movie props.
Yeah.
I love that sort of like curation. People can visit this museum. I love that.
That's super cool.
So in 1935, the NFSA began. It's got over 3 million works across movies, shows, new media, all kinds of artifacts. But here's the thing. For having started in 1935, they eventually shifted where they store everything. In 1984, the archive was moved into, from the pictures, a beautiful old building. It almost, honestly, it looks like something out of Washington, D.C. It looks like it's like, it kind of looks historic. Like the Capitol without the dome.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it looks a little bit like the White House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like big pillars.
Yeah, there's like Greek, Roman columns. I'm no architect. I don't know.
I don't know.
But it's just, it feels powerful and storied.
Mm-hmm.
So it moved in there in 1984. But here's the thing. That building that they moved into has been around since before 1984. It used to be something else before they moved in. It used to be the Australian Institute of Anatomy.
Oh.
Instead of housing the history of, like, film, at least the way that I imagine it, it was instead a museum of, like, bones and body parts.
That's what it sounds like,
The Institute of Anatomy. So a little bit about that. It was started by a Sir Colin McKenzie, whose ashes are evidently today still stored behind a plaque in the foyer of the building.
Cool.
Which I love. He sort of became a part of the building itself, which I really sort of love.
And people talk about buildings having good bones.
That's true, Kristen, my God.
Oh my God, it's well connected.
There's something about like immortality in that a little bit, mm-hmm. of like I'll just become part of this thing that I was attached to, which I like. So there's a phrase on a plaque that translates to, if you are looking for a monument to me, you are within it. You're standing inside my monument. There had been a number of reported sightings of Mackenzie's ghost. This, by the way, all comes from ischool.sjsu.edu. Most of the reports of his ghosts and of spooky activity come from the staff of the National Film and Sound Archive, with an employee who worked there in the 1980s coming forward with an experience even just last week. And then there's a sort of anonymous quote I've got. In the Film and Sound Archive, it seems you don't need to be a true believer. You can be a skeptic or sitting on the fence to have an experience, which I love too. Like, it takes everybody. Everybody Absolutely. Will have some sort of an experience there. So about the Australian Institute of Anatomy, which it used to be, it played host to countless forensic examinations and also served as a morgue. It housed hundreds of human skulls and body parts, most notably Farlap's heart.
What?
Farlap.
Is Farlap a guy?
He's a horse. It was New Zealand's greatest racehorse ever, according to Wikipedia.
Of course.
Greatest racehorse.
I wonder who's America's greatest racehorse ever. Seabiscuit?
Seabiscuit, I guess.
That's the only horse I could name.
Like Chunder Thunder? Don't they all have like great...
Yeah, like funny Chunder Thunder.
Thunder thighs. Yeah. So this is all from the CanberraTimes.com.au now. They also... there are some claims that it was home to Ned Kelly's skull.
Oh, I know about Ned Kelly. He's some sort of bad guy.
Wait, do you know about Ned Kelly?
Yeah, he's like a gangster.
Yes. Yes, Kristen, yes.
There was a movie called Ned Kelly that I think Orlando Bloom and Heath Ledger were in.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I know it.
I was a total stranger, a total novice. Right. So I looked him up because I saw the names Farlap and Ned Kelly, and I you know, I just
don't know.
I'm not from Australia, so maybe I'm just not familiar. So I checked him out a little bit. So Ned Kelly, full name Edward, was alive in the mid 1850s.
Mm-hmm. I was right.
You're right.
Yeah,
Kristen.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah.
Born in 1854, died in 1880. So it's at 26 years old?
Yeah.
Listen to this. This is from his Wikipedia. He was an Australian bushranger, an outlaw, a gang leader, and a convicted police murderer. One of the last bushrangers. I think this is almost sort of like a cowboy.
Okay.
Makes sense. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know that we've got Finn in the chat right now as well, who I think is from Australia. So I apologize if we're getting anything wrong. But I do believe that it feels a lot like the Old West,
mm-hmm.
a lot of this stuff. He's known for wearing a suit of bulletproof armor during his final shootout with police.
Wow.
Kristen, it's on display to this day. I looked at it. He looks like Iron Man.
Oh.
You know in Iron Man when Tony Stark builds his first suit in a cave with a box of scraps?
Yes, I do.
He looks like that. With Zodiac, admittedly, because it's like he's got a bucket on his head with like a flat top, like Frankenstein. But I looked at it. I didn't end up keeping all of this. It would probably take too long to find out. But it's like the gunfight lasted like a half hour. He ended up being shot. Like by the time that they brought him in, they say that they finally got him because they targeted his legs, which had no armor on them.
Ooh, oversight.
Yes. But by the time that they brought him in, he had bullet wounds all over his body that did get through the armor and like a bullet in his elbow and stuff, but he still just walked off to jail with them.
Huh.
And even he was later executed and his last words are highly disputed, but it was something he just kind of goes like, well, I guess it's come to this as they put the rope around his neck.
Wow.
He is a cowboy.
He's a cowboy. Yeah.
He's a cowboy.
He is a cowboy.
It just sounds incredible.
Yeah.
So, since then, the building frequently makes most haunted lists. Plus, there are endless spooky tales from workers, including a contractor who claims to have been pinned against the wall by something he couldn't see.
Ugh.
And then there's this, a ghost hunter named Dan McMath, who brought his team out to check the place. He very much feels... like, he's, like, of the modern ghost hunter realm. It was fun to see that even, you know, on the other side of the globe.
Right. It's not just an American phenomenon.
No. It's a dude in, like, an Ed Hardy shirt, and it says ghost down the side.
Amazing.
I'm not kidding.
I'm actually happy to hear that.
Yeah. So, I've got from an article here. Ghost hunters... Yeah. So, his company is called Ghost. Ghost Hunters of South Coast and Territories. Acronym Ghost. Then there's the West Sydney Paranormal Research... acronym Whisper, WSPR.
Wow.
The article even literally...
They did a really good job.
Whisper is a great name for a ghost hunting group. But in this article that I read, they even point out, quote, acronyms are big in this game.
Do they mention ghost pimps?
Or ghost plumps?
Right.
I wish.
I know. No, someday.
Sadly.
Someday it's going to be the first thing that comes to mind when people think about ghost show acronyms.
One day. So here's something Dan McMath had to say. In the main gallery, I thought I witnessed a black shadow dart across in front of me. When we went back into the gallery a few hours later, we were talking about this. And we did physically hear someone yell out. We can't figure out what they were saying, but we did hear it, which was quite weird. One of the guys from Whisper had an infrared GoPro on his head. It's just like, I know that he clearly has it like strapped on, but it just makes it sound like he was being a silly goofball balancing. He's got a camera on his head.
Yeah.
He thought he saw a shadow in the basement area underneath the bowels of the NFSA. I think they may have caught that shadow. But there's no confirmation like at all, so it's all just sort of like, it's just, it was just sort of comforting to read. Yeah. It's all the same stuff.
Yes, it's everywhere.
They also talk about how you
brought, I've just never thought about it before.
Never thought about
It's awesome.
It's like there's a different type of person who's just everywhere. Everywhere. Like how we've talked about this before, like different cultures all have a boogeyman.
Yes.
Everyone has a Bagans.
Yes. You know what? God bless.
Some guy with an EMF reader.
Right.
Ambiguously yelling. Talking about something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the haunted building. So just sort of more like chatter around it, I suppose.
Sure.
But this was also recommended, I think, directly by Jesse.
Yep.
I watched a movie.
Yes.
A movie.
I'm very curious about this.
I'll be thinking about this movie for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Picnic at Hanging Rock. It's from 1975, directed by Peter Weir. And immediately, I was hooked.
Yeah.
The opening text. I love well-done opening text. Tell me what this makes you think of.
Okay.
Black screen, white text.
I mean.
On Saturday, 14th, February 1900, a party of schoolgirls from Apple Yard College picnicked at Hanging Rock near Mount Macedon in the state of Victoria. During the afternoon, several members of the party disappeared without a trace.
Yeah, I wonder what it makes me think of. Blair Witch.
The obvious
no, I love it.
DNA
mm-hmm.
was staggering.
Yeah.
So this is all, it all comes from a book. This movie is based on a book, which itself was published as if it were real. Mm-hmm. As if this all really happened. It's all fiction.
Yeah.
But evidently for a time, and you know, maybe people do this tongue in cheek, because this is certainly just like a horror trope. People were like, do you know that movie's based on a real story? In the movie, there are missing posters. They show three missing girls.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like Heather, Mike, and Josh's missing poster.
Yeah.
I don't know this, but it looks like whoever made the missing posters for Blair Witch may have patterned the design.
Yeah, maybe.
After Picnic at Hanging Rock. So, Mrs. Appleyard runs a school for girls at college. Mrs. Appleyard herself is intense. She is like a very sort of like classic, and this is 1900, so again, this is now the end of the Wild West era,
yeah.
Right? Like, this is just before what we might start thinking of as like the roaring 20s and, uh-huh. and building skyscrapers and motorized cars and stuff. We're still dealing with horse-drawn buggies here, and she, Mrs. Appleyard running the school, is very much sort of like the uptight headmistress trope. Uh-huh. The girls are allowed to go on a trip to Hanging Rock. Literally like a little bit of a mountain. Big, spooky, tall spires of a mountain. And as you look at them, it's almost like seeing faces in the clouds. You sort of see faces in the rocks.
That's cool.
When they get there, though, everybody, all these girls and the teachers that are with them, just sort of sit at the base of the mountain.
Okay, just having a sit.
And it's almost like there's a gas leak.
Uh-huh.
It's so weird, and attention's not fully drawn to it, but like the camera like really pushes in on these like tight shots of ants crawling all over like fancy Victorian era clothing type stuff, and the people themselves are all just sort of like laying out like exhausted.
Getting drowsy.
Yes, except for four girls who climb up the mountain, one of them being Edith, who is described as being fat and dumpy.
Okay.
The other three girls with her are, one of them is described as being an angel. They are all sort of like the pretty popular girls.
Yeah.
But they're up to sort of no good.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is like a time where they are wearing corsets and everybody's like, you know, covered from their toes to their necks.
Yeah.
But ironically, there are other like people like just spending the day at the mountain.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of guys see the girls crossing the creek. And one of them's like, ooh. Look at her body. Look at the shape on her.
How can you tell?
And the camera lands on these girls, and it's like, it's all poops and fabric. I don't know. He goes, that one looks like she might be shaped like an hourglass. Like,
did he say might be?
I don't know if he said might be.
Yeah,
I might be saying. He did say something about an hourglass. In my really head, funny. I might have added the hedging the, might the bet, because who the hell could ever tell?
Right.
Anyway, it all makes me want to play Red Dead Redemption real bad. It's like very
it
much
sounds
that, like
Red Dead Redemption.
It's about the old world sort of going away, I yeah. think. So the four girls climb to the top of the hill. The cool girls start like taking off their shoes, and they take off their leggings mm-hmm. and stuff. They sort of like undress a little bit. They look a little bit more like witchy.
Yeah,
I have to say, where that sort of the witchiness of like communing with nature and yes. just being part of the place. And Edith is like, she's collapsing. Mm-hmm. She is like hardcore, like whining and being like, I can't do this anymore.
Edith is my gal.
Meanwhile, she's wearing, you know, gloves. It's clearly like 1,000 degrees outside.
Yeah, no wonder.
Maybe your culture shouldn't make you wear gloves right. in the singeing, burning heat.
Right.
So the girls, the cool girls, get up at a certain point and either ignoring Edith, who's calling after them, or it almost feels like, in a weird, witchy, magic-y way, they may not even really hear her
uh-huh.
anymore.
They're just on their own trip, man.
They're on their own trip. They're, like, prancing around, and they prance further up into the mountains, like, into a cave.
Uh-huh.
And Edith runs away screaming. Later, the girls, the three girls, and one of the teachers, Mrs. McCraw, are described as just having gone missing. Nobody knows. Nobody knows what to do. Edith came back. She can't even really tell us anything.
Yeah.
She has no idea what actually happened to them, but she did see something. As she was coming down the mountain, she saw a red cloud in the sky.
Mm.
And she saw the teacher who went missing, Mrs. McCraw, going up the mountain only in her underwear.
Oh.
Real weird.
Highly irregular.
Real weird stuff. So now we get into like some good old-fashioned search stuff. The police yeah. are there. They're searching through the woods. They're searching up the mountain. They've got bloodhounds. It very much is the stuff that like Blair Witch suggests off the screen. If yeah. you've ever read, and I know you have, the Blair Witch dossier, mm-hmm. which I think is an amazing book that I've never seen anything that fleshes out a movie quite as well as this book. They talk about the search parties going through those woods at the same time.
Yeah.
Heather, Mike, and Josh are already out there. They should be finding them, but they're not because right. something else is afoot.
Yes.
We see the search parties here looking for the girls. Cannot find them.
Hmm.
It all makes me think of Blackwood, Nope, Blair Witch, and Twin Peaks.
Yeah, it sounds Twin Peaks-y.
Very, very Twin Peaks-y.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if there is not some documentary of David Lynch talking about this yeah. movie, or if he did not see it and go and like take real inspiration from it.
Mm-hmm.
There are double exposures where somebody is dreaming and you see their face, but at the same time you see the girls going up the mountain.
Yeah.
It's all just overlaid on each other. It is so familiar. It's about dreams and feelings of things. They read that quote from Edgar Allan Poe, "All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream." It's all
that keeps coming up for me.
I know that was in something else recently. I couldn't yeah. think of it. I don't know what it is.
Director
Peter Weir evidently put a veil over the film lens to give it a sort of like ethereal feeling to it. Like everything is
like misty.
Loaded with this. You feel like there's like a gas leak or something that. Like,
I'm sure.
You sort of don't know what to make of it. So there's this one guy who saw the girls and was kind of like fascinated by them. He decides that he's going to hang back. He's going to try to find them once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
No, leave me. I'm staying here. I'll stay here overnight to find them.
Yeah.
He searches all over the mountain. He seems to hear their voices. Almost like he hears the conversation we heard them having previously on the mountain. Almost like there's a time thing going on. But there was one moment where the girls, the witchy girls, one of them says something along the lines where they're like, you ever notice that most people don't have any sort of purpose or function? Or people are functionally useless.
Uh-huh.
I assume they're fulfilling some purpose.
Yeah.
It's like a weird sort of like we're better than other people. It's the kind of thing that like Hitchcockian serial killers say.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Rope.
Yeah.
The guys are like, we're smarter than other people, so why shouldn't we kill them?
Right.
It's just like that sort of like overlord thinking. Everything begins and ends at exactly the right time and place. Mm-hmm. He's hearing these things and it seems to make him kind of nuts.
Uh-huh.
He runs up to a cave and eventually he is recovered off the mountain, like bruised and like he's been put through the ringer, and he's almost catatonic. He seems like he's almost lost his mind.
Yeah.
But his friend, like puts him up in like a cart to be taken away to safety. And the guy who stayed on the mountain and went kind of nutty reaches out and hands his buddy something. It's a piece of lace.
Ooh, cool.
He must have found something while he was there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so the madness sort of proliferates, right? Because now this other guy is kind of hooked. What?
Yeah, like, so how did this happen?
He goes up the mountain and he finds one of the girls. She's alive. She will be brought back to the school. She will be examined. They will determine that the injuries that she has sustained do not represent being lost in the woods for a week.
That's awesome. This sounds great.
It sounds great. I don't think I gave a spoiler warning, but it's Guide to the Unknown. Yeah. To do this. I would almost advise stop listening from here, because this all might have piqued your curiosity.
Uh-huh.
And I would advise people watch this.
Yeah.
It's very, very fun. They keep describing it. It's described as a mystery all over the place online. I don't know if I would describe it as a mystery.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful sort of little adventure.
It doesn't sound that mysterious. It's just sort of you want to know what happened.
Atmospheric and strange is right. So, the girl who came back down the mountain, who they found, Irma, she also has no answers.
Mm-hmm.
She will eventually leave the school. It's announced that she's going to leave. And as she says goodbye to all the other girls, they start, like, grabbing at her and clawing at her, going, "What happened up there? You have to tell us. You know something." Everyone in the movie is sort of driven nuts by not knowing.
Yeah.
It's all in pursuit of finding out what happened. Where are the other two girls? Where's Mrs. McCraw? We have to know that.
Yeah.
To feel okay.
Right. Have all some right. sort of resolution.
That's... I won't say anything else about... Well, there's a whole plot that I haven't touched on.
Okay.
Mrs. Applebottom, or whatever. What's her name? Applebottom Jeans. Mrs. Appleyard? Mrs. Appleyard, who runs the school.
Yeah.
She, the entire time, has been victimizing a different girl at the school named Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah was not allowed to go to Hanging Rock. She's friends with the witchy girls, though.
Uh-huh.
And Mrs. Appleyard seems not to like Sarah.
Doesn't sound like it.
Sarah's guardians, having sent her to this college, haven't been paying the bills. And so Mrs. Appleyard is making Sarah the brunt of her sort of verbal abuse and hostilities.
Yeah.
And she resolves, "I'm going to kick you out of school, Sarah. You're going to go away."
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, we learn, has a sad past. She doesn't have parents. She comes from an orphanage where she was abused. And when Mrs. Appleyard finds this out, she goes to Sarah and says, "I am sending you back to the orphanage."
Yeah, I knew she was going
to
love it.
Just to twist the knife, yeah. You know? So, Mrs. Appleyard is driven insane by what's going on at Hanging Rock because with the girls missing, people are trying to pull their kids out of school.
Uh-huh.
And she won't have
this.
It's
not good for business, I would think.
It's not good for business. And she won't stand for this. But it seems to almost be doing some internal damage to her more than anything else. So, at the end of the movie, Mrs. Appleyard claims to somebody, "Oh, Sarah? She was already picked up."
Hmm.
Hmm. The gardener will go outside to the greenhouse and find broken glass. Looking up, he notices that the roof of the greenhouse has been smashed in. And there is Sarah's body lying in a bed of, you know, plants, flowers, yeah. soil yeah. bed. Seemingly, she fell from her window. Mm-hmm. Jumped? Either way.
Pushed?
She's dead.
Yeah.
He goes inside to report the body to Mrs. Appleyard. And when he opens the headmistress's office door, she is sitting at her desk, all in black, in a black veil, with her bags packed. She just turns and locks eyes with him and doesn't say a word. A voiceover interrupts and explains, "After this event, Mrs. Appleyard's body was later found at Hanging Rock."
Oh.
She evidently, seemingly, had tried to climb and fell to her death. The end. No answers.
It sounds awesome.
It was great. I do think you would struggle with it. I think you would enjoy it on some level, but it's...
I could also see that.
Yeah, it's 70. It's 1975. It is slow-paced.
Yes.
But it's almost the great antithesis to my complaints about The Fog, where it's like, I feel something simmering under the surface with Picnic at Hanging Rock that I didn't feel in The Fog.
Yeah, yeah.
So even though it's longer, and it is, even though it's slower, and it is, I wouldn't have called it boring. It was. I thought it was kind of like fascinating, and it felt like movie DNA. It felt like a history lesson to me. I love that sort of a thing.
It sounds sweet.
So a couple of quick bits of trivia about it, because they, quite frankly, are just dope. The first lines of the film's source, the novel, Picnic at Hanging Rock, by Joan Lindsay, in a foreword, read, quote, "Whether Picnic at Hanging Rock is fact or fiction, my readers must decide for themselves. As the fateful picnic took place in the year 1900, and all the characters who appear in this book are long since dead, it hardly seems important."
Mm-hmm.
That just sort of like, do with it what you will.
Yeah,
real,
right.
Fake, who cares? Yeah,
are you enjoying it?
I'm telling you a story.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
She seems to have been heavily involved with the production. This is very strange. There are several times during the story in which clocks and watches stop for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm.
Author Joan Lindsay was well known among her friends for having the peculiar quality of, unintentionally, stopping watches and clocks in her vicinity.
Oh, cool.
A phenomenon that occurred and was recorded many times during her life.
That's awesome.
And according to director Peter Weir, one of the official distributors was so angry that the film lacked any explanation to the central mystery that at the end, he threw his cup of coffee at the screen.
That's awesome.
I love that.
Yeah.
And the final thing I've got for you, Raj, I've got two reviews. I've got a bad review and a good review. Which do you want first?
I think bad first.
Bad first. Yeah. Here we go. This is Just Mike saying, titled, "Yet More Strange Doings from Australia."
Hmm.
This guy's tracking everything Australia is up to.
He knows.
A little too atmospheric for my taste. But I guess since it's still an unsolved mystery, there wasn't anything else for the director to go.
Look, Mike's absolutely right.
This is a true story. 1900, Conan Doyle should have gotten involved.
Oh, my God.
Just wishes he'd been in the movie,
I guess. Taking things very literally.
I know. And then here's the good review by B-Movie Sheriff. "A slightly drug-enhanced dream with something evil lurking just out of sight. Still the best version of this chilling mystery. Kind of feels like a slightly drug-enhanced dream while something evil lurks just out of sight."
That's funny.
I don't think I realized that basically his title.
He just took it, yeah.
Steals the thunder. Def a must-see for fans of unsolved true mysteries and just a delightful old-style mystery altogether. So still people think it's real.
Yeah, right.
Which
right.
are just...
Just an unsolved mystery.
Right.
That's so cool.
That's Picnic and Hanging Rock. Highly recommend.
I love it. I'll definitely watch that.
Yeah.
I remember they showed it at... when I still lived in the same town as you, there's an outdoor movie theater during the summer, and they showed it once, and I was going to go, and then I did not.
They did?
Yes.
I'm kind of surprised. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it was a few years ago, and maybe that's even when I found out about it as a thing. I know I researched it like in conjunction with writing things about the Blair Witch Project, but yeah, I remember looking it up and being like, that sounds awesome, but that was probably just lazy that night, didn't go.
Yeah, I think I'd heard about it in passing. I think I'd heard like people cite it as a something that they took inspiration from to create something else, but I'd never really paid attention to it as a movie itself.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I watched it.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. We hope you enjoyed this trek down under. We hope that our Australian listeners felt that we did their beautiful homeland justice.
I hope so.
And thank you so much for everybody who's listening. As we said before, if you'd like to support the show, which we greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate, because we want to do more. We've got 8 million billion ideas.
I know.
And you supporting the show really helps us look toward making them happen. Like we watch it, we calculate. It's makes a huge difference when you support us at patreon.com/gttupod. And thank you so much for everybody who already does. You can also go to gttupod.com, which is the home of Guides the Unknown online. It has links to all of our social media, all of our past episodes, information about advertising with us, a link to our private Facebook group, and you can also find all of our appearances on other shows there.
Yeah.
Will just added a page that catalogs every time we were on another podcast, which is pretty neat. So we hope you check that out.
Yeah, check it out, and thank you so much to everybody who enjoys this show, who supports us either on Patreon or just by sharing or reviewing. we can't thank you enough.
Yes, truly.
So, yeah, and also, please, if you're interested, go check out themythtraveler.com.
Yep.
Check out my story, Elder Things, episode 0. You can read right away. Episode 1 is for paid subscribers. It's like $5 a month, $50 a year, either way you try to slice it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got other stuff there, too, that I just can't share. Yeah. Anywhere else, really. And some hints at other stuff I'm working on.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun. So thank you all so much. Next week we'll be back. I definitely want to take a look at Spontaneous Human Combustion. I don't know if it can sustain a full show.
We'll see what happens.
We'll just see what happens. I don't know. Yeah. But you can follow us online in the meantime.
Yep. I'm at Chillin' Kristen.
I'm at The Myth Traveler. So thank you all so much. We hope you have a great rest of your day. We'll see you next week. But until that time comes, we must travel.
Back to the netherworld, go we.
And Finn Doyle in the chat right now. My family would drive past Hanging Rock every time we went down the coast, and I totally thought it was a true story.
That's awesome.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I wonder, could you see it? Could you like be in the car and like glance out and be like, that's the place.
Right.
And even, by the way, even that it's a fake story, but it revolves around a real landmark.
Place. Totally. I love that.
Oh my God, I would love that.
Yeah. That's so fun.
So cool.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.